New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney joins us to discuss his plan to get the Democrats back on track for 2018.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified today in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Our reactions to what he said.
And the White House tries to get back on track with this domestic agenda, rolling out infrastructure and workforce plans. And we've got the latest on the Virginia governor's race. It's Tuesday, June 13th. Welcome to Political Culture.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Political Culture.
I'm so confused about what's going on. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Tuesday. Happy
only again. Tuesday.
Only Tuesday.
This is my most exciting Tuesday in a long time.
Yeah, it's always a good Tuesday when you've got lots of stuff happening in Washington, D.C. We've got the latest on Jeff Sessions' testimony today.
Yeah, and same with elections from abroad that we get to talk about.
British and the French, and of course the Virginia's governor's race. But first, he's the congressman from the 18th District of New York and a member of the Committees on Agriculture and Transportation and Infrastructure. On the phone from D.C., welcome to the show, Representative Sean Patrick Maloney.
Hey there, great to be with you.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us today. Let's just jump right into it. What's your general reaction from the Jeff Sessions testimony today?
Well, look, you know, it's just one more chapter in a very troubling set of events. And, you know, there's still a lot of questions in my mind about why he was not recused when the filing of Jim Comey was about Russia. He's supposed to be recused from Russia. I think we need to know more on that. And the biggest thing that happened today is that he refused, just flat out refused, under oath, to answer questions without citing any privilege, without citing executive privilege. He just didn't answer them. And as the kids say, that's not a thing. You either have to answer or you have to invoke a privilege. He did neither. That's a problem.
Was there anything that you were pleasantly surprised that he disclosed today?
You know, look, I don't think today was actually the most important day. I think the main event is what's going on with Bob Mueller. Let that investigation play itself out. We should all be okay with the facts. We should all be okay with making it fair. I would let Bob Mueller do his work, but I do think we know enough to know that guys like Mike Flynn and Paul Manafort may have broken the law. There was a lot of stuff going on between the Trump campaign and Russia. We don't understand why we should. And what we do know is that the Russians engaged in an unprecedented effort to attack our country in cyberspace during the election, and they had a candidate that they favored. And while I don't know if it affected the outcome, we should know what the heck they were doing. So it's serious stuff, and there's a lot more to come. I do think we should get some stuff done for people that they need to get done. It shouldn't be the only thing we do. But it is, and I'm a lot more concerned in some ways about what they're trying to do to people's health care and what they're trying to do to the environment and the rest. I don't want us to get too distracted that we don't make sure we pay attention to what they're trying to do there. But there's a lot more to come.
Yeah,
so
it's
let's
a good
talk.
Segue.
So let's talk about getting work done for the American people. So you sit on the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Last week, the White House rolled out its infrastructure plan, specifically starting with the privatization of the FAA. Are there things in the plan that you like, and are there things that Democrats on your committee are willing to work with?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I would not confuse this thing they want to do with the FAA with an infrastructure plan, right? Like, the
right.
President promised us a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. This ain't it. This has been a goal of the Republican Party for a long time, privatize the air traffic control system. There are some countries that do it, like Canada and the UK, where they have a kind of quasi-government entity do it. There's some pros and cons to it. There are some ways we can improve the way air traffic control is done. Point is this has nothing to do with the massive investments we need in our roads and our bridges and our rail systems and our ports and our broadband and our airports. I mean, that's infrastructure. This is tinkering with the governance structure of the air traffic control system. I think what most Americans want is they want their bridges not to fall down, and they want to, you know, have highways without potholes. They want to be able to get from point A to point B in a reasonable time, and maybe ride a train that's fast and clean and safe. And we should be doing all that. And he would have a lot of support in the Democratic Party if he put his Twitter account down long enough to focus on infrastructure.
Yeah. Do you think that there's anything with privatization that is a good idea? Or is there some nefarious reason why they're trying to privatize virtually everything?
Well, like everything, you know, the devil's in the details. In this case, the worry would be that the big airlines have too much influence over the air traffic control system. They control the airspace in a way that will squeeze out some of the general aviation guys or disfavor some of the rural airports, like some of the ones I represent. So there's some problems that could happen. But look, there's a fair conversation about how the FAA runs. The biggest problem is we don't fund it regularly, and we've had really slow implementation of technology. I'm not closed-minded to a different governing structure. The Brits do this with government owning about half the corporation. The Canadians do it a little bit differently. But it has nothing to do with really getting America going on infrastructure. It is a minor issue compared to the real challenges we have.
So I just want to follow up on the infrastructure piece real quick. So how do you explain, you're a congressman from a blue state, how do you explain to middle America flyover states that their taxes might be raised because they now have to, we have to now invest in a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, versus cutting, but at the same time telling them that we aren't going to cut the defense budget, or telling them or explaining to them that we have to cut the defense budget, and then they don't quite understand that piece of it? Like, what do you tell them how it's supposed to work?
Listen, I think Americans in every part of the country understand infrastructure. And if you're talking about mass transit in the cities or commuter rails, yeah, the people in rural areas don't care as much. That's why you marry it up with roads and bridges and things they do care about. I mean, it's not rocket science. There has to be something in it for folks who live in different parts of the country. We can do that. We've done it before. There's no reason to expect they're going to care about somebody else's infrastructure. But, you know, if you live in Louisiana, you got $15 billion of post-Katrina infrastructure. That's a red state. You know, if you look around the South or the West in some of these more conservative states, they have huge infrastructure needs, and their governors will tell you. And they want federal leadership on this, and the government, you know, should respond. The president promised a $1 trillion investment. There's a bunch of us dying to work with him on that. We should have spent money on infrastructure instead of the Iraq War, right? We could have had high-speed rails and new bridges and all kinds of new airports. And we can make better choices, but we should get together in a way that all parts of the country can support it. It's actually one of the easiest issues we face. But right now, the president's bogged down in a lot of nonsense and investigations, largely of his own making, and he's getting nothing done.
I see that in the Trump plan, there's also a lot of privatization. Is that like toll roads, or is that the government giving private corporations the money to build these things? Or neither.
Well, we don't know because there's not a plan. I mean, it could run the gamut, right? You could be talking about concession agreements where private companies build and operate different types of infrastructure. Sometimes those make sense. A lot of times they don't. You could be talking about social infrastructure like courthouses and schools that could be paid for by the federal government, but provided by, you know, the private sector under different types of arrangements. There's all kinds of things that can happen. Straight privatization, where you just turn over governmental functions to the private sector, is often a very bad idea. If you think about prisons, for example, we shouldn't be doing that. And so there are good forms of private involvement and bad forms. But I think the Trump folks are clearly focused on what they call P3s, public-private partnerships. But those are good in some cases and not in others. That's why we need a plan from the president. That's why he's got to come out and get on the field with us on this instead of just talking about it. I mean, we are 6 months in. They have no plan.
And so you said that there are Democrats willing to work with. Can you name a number of them so that we know that at least this many number were willing to work with him, because he's going to tell us that no Democrats were willing to work with him?
Oh, that's nonsense. I mean, if he was talking about, let's look at some of the things he promised during his campaign. I mean, he's promised. One thing, he wanted to overturn the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That was a major priority of Democrats on the Hill. That's absolutely something we'll work with him on. He wants to negotiate, he said he did, negotiate prescription drug prices in the Medicare program. He'd get a ton of Democratic support for that. We should do it. He said he wants to eliminate the carried interest loophole, that allows, multimillionaire hedge fund owners to pay less in taxes than their secretaries as a percentage. You know, a bunch of us would sign up for that in a heartbeat. And on infrastructure, there's easily 50 Democrats in the House and probably a 20 in the Senate. who would be happy to work with him on a smart, balanced plan to get the country going again. I mean, he had an opportunity to govern as something of a third-party president, but instead he's just jumped right over into the most conservative part of the Republican Party on health care and other issues, not to mention the problems with Russia and the rest, that had driven his popularity down to, you know, historic lows, and that make it very hard for him to get anything done.
So speaking of Republicans and Democrats and what everybody's doing, so next year all 435 congressional seats are up, which means you're about to be in the middle of another campaign in the 18th, and Democrats have to hold on to 23 Senate seats. You recently started an initiative, Adopt a District. Can you explain this idea, how it came up, and any of the successes that you've seen from it? I've already seen Congressman Judy Chu here in California adopt a district, I believe, in the 25th. So can you explain, like, where that idea came from and what successes you guys have seen from it?
Well, sure. So they passed this, you know, terrible Trump care bill through the House, and none of them would do town hall meetings on it. And our office started getting a bunch of calls from the neighboring guy's constituents. A guy named John Fasto represents the Hudson Valley just to the north of me. They weren't even answering their phones, so they're calling me. And then I find out that, you know, people are begging him to do a town hall meeting, and he won't. There was a young woman named Andrea who had a brain tumor who had asked him to promise that he wouldn't go after pre-existing conditions, and he did anyway. And she was on TV saying how she felt naive and why he wouldn't answer her questions. And I said, you know what, if that guy's not going to stand up at a town hall meeting and answer their questions, I'm going to do it. And so we went up there, we said that on a Friday night. By Monday night when we did it, we had 500 people in a big space in Kingston, New York. And these are folks that were not at some political rally. They were deathly concerned about what this would mean to their health care. These are people with kids on the autism spectrum. They're people with pre-existing conditions, you know, heart conditions. They're people who are spending tens of thousands of dollars on life-saving medicine. So they want to make sure when essential health benefits get whacked by these guys, it doesn't mean the insurance companies can deny coverage for those drugs. I mean, these are really important questions for people. And so what happened is it kind of took off. And people said, hey, we can do this everywhere. Democrats can go into Republican districts and answer the questions they won't and talk to people who, you know, maybe we don't always talk to, and maybe talk to some people we don't already agree with, and get out in these red districts and start making our case. And it kind of took off. And what you saw over the Memorial Day break was that about 20 Democrats did this in districts all over the country. And my Twitter account and social media is lit up by regular folks all over the country saying we want to do this where we live because our Republican, you know, congressman voted for this terrible Trump care bill and won't talk to us about it. And so I think it's kind of a neat idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been a really great idea. So please send some congressmen to Daryl Issa's district because he's standing on roofs right now, not talking to his constituents. So I do think that some Californians need to adopt that district and take that over. But as you guys go into the 2018 election, what is the message from the DNC and the DCCC that you guys will be taking into the election? And do you think, personally, will it be enough to take back the majority in the House or at least come close to taking the majority in the Senate?
Well, you know, look, like it or not, you know, the overriding issue is going to be, you know, how's it working? You know, how do you like a Republican House and Senate and the Trump administration? And if it's not working so well for you, well, maybe you ought to give us a chance to pump the brakes and hold the guy's feet to the fire and start passing bills that fix our health care system, do the things we need done, that invest in infrastructure, get our economy going. And, you know, I think the most important thing is that we bring people to the party and we start being a Bobby Kennedy party again and start exciting young people and people who live in cities, but also talk to people who live in Appalachia and rural areas. You know, my district's a rural district. It's about 60% rural. I'm a gay guy with an interracial family. I am not necessarily from central casting in terms of who you would expect them to elect. But, you know, I live in this space every day where you've got to talk to people who are different than you. You've got to find common ground. You have to focus on what's important to them, which sometimes I think we forget. We think our job is to go lecture people on what's important to us. You know, we represent people. We should be listening to them. And what they'll tell you is they're worried about that mortgage and they're worried about the cost of college and all the debt their kid has and why he's sleeping in the basement instead of getting his own apartment because they can't pay the loans and how they're worried about their health care. And we need to talk about those things that matter in the lives of everyday people. And then build a relationship with them, built on trust and results. And I think if we do that, we're going to do pretty good. And I think you're going to see a big backlash to what this president is doing, because it's not working, and it's a mess.
Well, let's...
mess is an understatement,
I think. That is an understatement. Last question. You went to the University of Virginia. Any thoughts on the Virginia governor's race? Ralph Northam has beat Tom Perriello in the primary, and I think Susan Platt might have taken the lieutenant governor's race. Any thoughts on that race?
You know, I'm not going to know as much about it as others, so you're probably better off looking for wisdom elsewhere. I will tell you that... I'll tell you that the most important thing is that we win some of these governor's races, so that when redistricting happens, we get a fair shot instead of all these shenanigans that happened last time.
Yeah,
these governor's races are very important that we hold. So, the important thing to me is that we win in the fall. And primaries are always tough, and it's important that we come together now. So you let the voters sort it out. But the key thing is that you win in November, from my point of view.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today. I know you got to get back to the business of the people. We really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
Good luck with your campaign.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Lots. Great to have him on.
Yeah.
What a great congressman, and his family.
I really
super
love
cute.
the adopt a district thing. I want to go watch one of these. If somebody like Judy Chu coming to Steve Knight's district,
right.
25, like I'd actually want to go to that and see, take some popcorn and be
just
a fly
watch.
On the wall. Yeah,
I think they should Facebook Live them every time they do it.
I think some of them
great.
Are.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Let's talk about Jeff Sessions and your reaction.
Well, real quick before we do that, because there's a lot of news that we won't be able to kind of talk in depth through. So we want to do a quick rundown of like crazy things that
so
have happened.
So we can get it out of the
get
way.
Get it all out of the way
and get really elbow deep
right.
in just this Jeff Sessions madness.
Today. The Senate Rules Committee tried to announce that they were going to bar reporters from the Capitol hallways, bar them from talking and asking questions in the hallways. But then today, of course, because of all the hoopla, they reversed course on that. Yesterday, if you're watching the news, the Attorney Generals of Maryland and the District of Columbia filed a lawsuit against the president saying that Trump's failure to sell off his interests in hotels, golf courses, office buildings, and other properties is undermining the public trust and violating the Constitution's
Emoluments
Clause.
Yes, there are several of those.
Emoluments Clause.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun to say once you get it down.
Right. Emoluments.
Exactly. You got it.
Puerto Rico. My fiance is from Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans voted overwhelmingly to apply for statehood with 97% of the vote. This will set in motion the possibility of Puerto Rico becoming the 51st state of the Union, which Republicans will not like.
Right, because do we know how many are Democrats and Republicans? Because they don't really get a vote. So.
I don't think so, but I think that just based on the primary results, I think you get an idea of what those numbers are.
Puerto Rico
like.
Would definitely go blue.
Puerto Rico, Josh, our engineer says Puerto Rico would definitely
absolutely.
Go blue.
I just wonder like how blue.
It'd be interesting. Only 23% of the population voted in that election.
Well, they sound American already.
They're working. Things are working out just fine.
Right in.
Actually, I'd be interested in putting Puerto Rico up. I should have thought about this. Putting Puerto Rico up against what other states and what their percentages are in terms of how they vote in this. But it seems that Puerto Ricans are very interested in having representation.
That interested if only 23% turned out to vote for it.
Well, 97% of the 23%.
So everybody figured
impressive.
Everybody's going to vote yes.
Yeah,
I don't need to go home.
Okay. So basically, they're American. The Supreme Court might take up and issue a ruling in Gill versus Whitford, the first in a redistricting. This is really interesting to me. A redistricting case along partisan party lines in Wisconsin. So right now we look at redistricting as a race thing, as a where
it's a way to have the incumbent select their voters
right.
rather than the voters selecting their representative.
Right, and now they're trying to draw them along party lines. Based on probably based on who is registered to vote, and then kind of carve that out in that.
Yeah, because every representative wants to keep their job, so they're going to draw it the way they see fit, which is really part of the problem. We call this gerrymandering.
Yeah.
And, I'll be keeping a close eye on this.
Not good. British and French elections. Conservative UK Prime Minister and her party failed to reach the 326
This was a surprise,
seats.
Right? Because didn't she was she didn't even
surprise
have to have she didn't have to hold this election.
Right.
She did it
herself.
A couple years sort of like early.
Right.
Hoping to get even more of a majority, and it completely backfired.
Right. And I don't think that they were anticipating the numbers that Jeremy Corbyn and his Labour Party were going to bring. I mean, you're talking Conservatives had 318, Labour had 262. They just fell short by a few seats. But right now, Theresa May is looking to. I was reading about how this, what would happen, like what the situation is. So Theresa May doesn't get it. Obviously, they have to now form two parties. They have to convince another party. So basically, from what I understand, she decided to work with like the far extreme right to like get the numbers necessary to keep her prime ministership. But I think she faces some fierce opposition in getting. In keeping her prime ministership. I mean, we even saw the last prime minister step down because of like a much smaller thing than this.
Brexit? Didn't he say I can't really lead this country if these people want to leave because I don't really want to leave?
Right, but then it turns out that a majority of UKians don't want to leave, and these are the numbers that you're now seeing, and Theresa May is now trying to force Brexit upon the country.
What's happening in Russia? How I hadn't heard about this.
Monday. Or 2 days. Monday?
That would be yesterday.
Sunday? Monday. Over 1,000 people were arrested in Russia yesterday, including the opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. I think that's how you say his name. He was a protest organizer. In more than 100 Russian towns, saw tens of thousands of people rise up against Vladimir Putin and coinciding with Russia Day. So they arrested like thousands. They were pulling people out of, like, from what I understand from the news, they were pulling people out of the lines at random and just arresting them.
Oh, so there were more than 1,000 protesters protesting.
Correct.
They just handpicked whichever 1,000 people
correct.
They wanted to
and
arrest.
And they arrested 1,000 of the tens of thousands.
Uh-huh.
Big news this week, the Trump administration is looking into rolling back the Obama-era Cuba policy.
Book your Cuba trip
just
now.
I was just talking about this the other day because somebody was like, oh, I want to go to Cuba. And I was like, I don't know if you're going to be able to. This was last week. Even before this news came out, I was like, I have a feeling something's going to come down the pike because this administration loves to roll back any good policy ideas that Barack Obama had. Let's talk
now
about
the good stuff.
The good Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions.
Oh my. Okay, so can I tell you my favorite part?
Yes.
John McCain asking coherent questions.
He got it now.
This time. And because the Comey questions were just mind-boggling. But the questions that he asked were all about the serious nature of the Russian sort of invasion hacking into our elections and having Jeff Sessions confirm, like, this is a thing. This is happening.
Right. But he didn't say that earlier in the testimony, which I believe he said, and I quote, if it actually occurred.
Well, but so John McCain kind of, because John McCain's been one of the Republicans, few, who has been very willing to look at any possible collusion.
Right.
And so he firmly believes that there was Russian interference and thinks it's a big deal. And Jeff Sessions confirmed, yes, that there was interference on a massive scale. Now, the question that he won't answer, of course, is collusion, which he calls a lie, and what was this fancy word that he used that we'd never...
Scurrilous. Scurrilous and false accusations on collusion.
So when I hear Republicans now saying, oh, this whole Russia thing is just the Democrats' sore loser way of trying to blame somebody other than Hillary for losing
right.
the election. But now we have Jeff Sessions saying... No, they tried to interfere.
Well, he didn't have a choice. Everybody had said this. Hillary Clinton had said it back in.
But if you heard Jeff Sessions' testimony, he actually, instead of saying, yes, Senator McCain, you're correct, he went on and elaborated and sounded truly passionately concerned about this.
Well, what else is he going to do?
Just say, yeah, it may be happening. It probably did.
But he said that at the beginning. That's what I'm saying.
So he got worn down at some point, and the truth bubbled up to the surface.
Kamala Harris wore him down, because I think at one point he told her that, you know, she was talking too fast and asking too many questions, and it made him a little flustered. Like, that's what he said.
And that's what you get when you go up against a former prosecutor. I don't know what...
She's the Attorney General.
But Jeff Sessions...
is a former prosecutor.
Yeah, so he just doesn't like to be grilled like a prosecutor.
No, he does not. And he certainly...
That's what we learned today.
I have a feeling that he also doesn't like being talked to like that from a black female senator from California.
You might be right about that.
I do want to talk briefly, just go back to just John McCain real quick, because this is going to put him in a very interesting situation. Obviously, he is very passionate about getting to the bottom of whatever it is, and he's been a very strong critic of Donald Trump. Cindy McCain is about to be appointed to the Trump administration as an ambassador for, like, human rights or something like that. Apparently, Donald Trump has been courting her for months and trying to get her to come on to the Trump administration. So I'd be very interested to see how John McCain's going to play this out over the next few months.
I don't think we're going to see publicly
But I'm surprised that Cindy McCain would even consider working in this administration.
In the testimony today, did you, because I read some of it and just listened to a small part of it, that there was so much real true defensiveness, how dare you?
Right.
You get that sense?
I did. And I don't know. Have you been watching House of Cards?
I'm done with the season.
Did you? Okay. So do you remember? I'm not going to give anything away, but do you remember the scene where Frank Underwood went into the committee hearing? He sat down and he was giving this testimony, and he was like very passionate about what he was saying. He like called them out, and I remember tweeting about it. I said, I feel like Jeff Sessions just watched that episode of House of Cards, and that is the that is what he took from that.
Yeah.
And he thought, and it goes back to this comfortability situation. He was not talking in front of a group of people who have oversight over his department. So I feel like he felt that he had a little bit more wiggle room to get more defensive in a way that he would if he was at Judiciary, which he knows if he went back to Judiciary, which is why he's trying to avoid it, they would ask him why he lied to them during his testimony. And I think, you know, a friend of mine pointed out that he talks slower when it comes to Democrats. So, and I said that's to run out the time on them, which he did with Kamala Harris. And, you know, when it came to Ron Wyden, when it came to some of the other Democrats, that's when he really got defensive.
There was a real stark difference in his willingness to answer questions and to even go a bit beyond the questions, depending on the letter following the name of the questioner.
Tom Cotton, it was really interesting because Tom Cotton, who I think is just a little, you know, he's a lot of things.
We're not a fan.
Not a fan. He actually tried to make a point that, oh, well, Democrats are here to talk about the Russia investigation and not necessarily the investigation, but how Russia hacked and how we can get, you know, work together to get past this. And nobody asked the question about, you know, why and how and all this stuff. And I remember saying to myself,
why, how, about what?
How Russians hacked it. What is the Justice Department doing and all this stuff? And I remember saying to myself, if Tom Cotton is asking a question about a question, why doesn't he just ask the question? And not one time during the rest of his questioning did he ask the question that he said the Democrats weren't asking in the first place.
I heard a lot of Republicans just using their time to reiterate things, sort of ask hypothetical questions, but not really asking questions much at all.
Right. The only person who I felt did that was Chairman Burr. Right from the gate, he did ask very tough questions. And I do think that we talked about it before, where Senator Burr, I think he wants to get to the bottom of it. I think that he's just trying to tread super lightly on how fast he gets there.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio, who just had dinner with Donald Trump last week, at the White House, I think that's where you see that tone. Because for somebody like Tom Cotton, who talks about national security so much and did during the campaign, for him to not be more interested in an adversary like Russia influencing the democratic process is fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this whole bit about trying to downplay it and just, you know, it's a Democrats' excuse. I just, at this point, I mean, because even I was wondering, like, really? Are we just putting too much emphasis on this? Is this really not that big of a deal? But when you, that's why it was so remarkable to me when Jeff Sessions was so insistent that, yes, it is a big problem. And then on the flip side of that, he was really, like, what I thought was overly defensive about his possible involvement with them, to where if I were to play armchair psychologist, I see some guilt there.
Right.
And some, you gotta, like,
people get defensive.
Yeah. Rather than saying, you know, I'm open if you'd like to look, I stand by conversations that I had and didn't have. You're welcome to investigate. I will be, you know, continuing my work in other areas of the Justice Department in the meantime. I welcome your questions. I will help you get this investigation completed so that we can move on to, you know, more important matters in the Justice Department, rather than being so angry and creative with these words about
appalling
how,
and detestable lies, scurrilous and false allegations.
And how dare a lot of, you know, kind of how dare you?
I also think, just from that piece of it, I think that he thought that because he was going in front of a body that he just left, a bunch of people that they would be friendlier towards him. And you got a lot of new senators on that that committee. You got a lot of people who are looking towards 2020 on that committee, who want to get their shots in now. And I think that he thought he was, you know, even Ivanka Trump thought, the Fox and Friends thought that Washington was going to be a little nicer.
Oh, interesting.
And come to find out that it's not
so much. Can we get into the recusal issue for a second?
Yes.
Because he was asked questions about that.
Yes. So he says that in terms of recusing himself from the Russia investigation, a lot of the questions are specifically about recusing him, about his involvement in James Comey's firing. And he said that he had the power to fire Comey and should not have had to recuse himself because he only recused himself from one specific investigation, talking about Russia, but there were other issues. He could never name another issue. And he was asked repeatedly, like, so tell us about reasons why. And then he invoked
Why
he told Trump to fire Comey, which he invoked non-privilege.
He kind of, like, did a whole basket of privileges.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, executive privilege among others, which I thought, is that a way of invoking your Fifth Amendment right just by saying, among others, there may be privileges?
So it seemed to me that he was what the gist of it was, and I think a lot of the senators said this, you are doing a hypothetical, thinking that the president's going to invoke executive privilege. That's why you don't want to answer these questions, which you saw Kamala Harris and a bunch of Democrats press him on the DOJ policy. He was like, well, that's DOJ standard practices. These are things that are written down.
And
historic practices and things like that. And he said, I recuse myself because the Justice Department regulation required it, not because of any wrongdoing, which everybody was like, well, show me the receipts. Show me the policy. And I think at one point, and I'm saying Kamala Harris because we are from California and we follow her a lot on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. And she said that as the chief law, and Chuck Schumer came out, Dick Durbin, they all came out with statements by saying, if the chief law enforcement officer of the United States cannot cite the legal policy, then the chief law enforcement officer should not be the chief law enforcement officer.
Yeah, I think
that
defines incompetence.
Right. Mm-hmm. And to the point where Jeff Sessions and this Trump administration cannot understand the difference between independent Justice Department officials, including the Attorney General, even though the Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the President, and the White House counsel. And I think that that is something that Jeff Sessions is grappling with, which is how much do I protect the president? How much do I protect the people of the Department of Justice, the American people, and the FBI? And you saw that today. He was too busy trying to protect the Trump administration that he failed, in my opinion, to protect the American people when it came to the information that that their representatives wanted.
So I think now, because he stonewalled so much, refused to answer so many questions, there may be a subpoena, and then if he fails to answer them there, then contempt. So this could get interesting.
Soon. Interesting. There was also on the Comey situation. A couple of things in terms of timeline that I thought were really interesting, where he said that he recommended James Comey's firing without even talking to Comey about his performance, which was interesting, which you're like, okay, so you just fired somebody just because? But we all know that the president cited one specific case as to why he felt he had to fire Comey, which was the Russia investigation. He said it himself. And in the letter from Rod Rosenstein, it was how he handled the 2016 election. So nowhere in the time did Jeff Sessions say to James Comey, like, hey, you know, this Hillary Clinton thing wasn't great.
How can we do better next time?
Sorry, we got to let you go, but, you know, obviously these are the things. And you saw that in Comey's testimony last week. But on the other side of that is that he also stated that he didn't have conversations with the president about the investigation, about the Comey. Like, so I'm like, so you're just what?
At this point, I don't remember him answering very many questions, and there was a lot of I don't recall, I don't remember, and you know that reminds me of how I used to prep my clients for depositions. I mean, unless you recall the exact detail that you are being asked. In that question, you can say, I don't know, I don't remember, I don't recall.
Well, he said a lot of, I do not recall, and a lot of no recollections.
But when you say them that frequently, and you have a right to do that, you know, the inference can still be drawn in a Senate Intelligence Committee. It can't be drawn in a court of law. Well, a jury could.
Right.
But it just looks awful. And he had no legal reason to not answer the questions.
And then my question was, if you didn't have recollections of meeting Kislyak and any Russian official, why? And this was surprising that, like, Kamala Harris and a couple of other senators didn't ask this question. Why would you go back and then amend your testimony to include that you had remembered that you had meetings? So did you have meetings or did you not have meetings? Because not recalling something and then coming back and being like, actually, written testimony, I actually did, so I don't get myself in trouble, so I need to amend this testimony. Like, that's I feel like, the pattern. Because he
wasn't a meeting, it was a run-in.
Right.
Not in official capacity.
Right. So does he now need to go back and
re-amend
the amended testimony? That's what I'm interested in. I was also really impressed with Senator Heinrich from New Mexico.
We don't talk about Senator Heinrich very often.
Young Senator Heinrich, he was pretty pointed about why, you know, he said, you only have like a couple of buckets. You either have executive privilege, you either have the longstanding DOJ policy, or you have classified information, but you can only choose one.
Or if you're about to, you know, incriminate yourself, I guess.
Or plead the fifth.
You're right.
And as soon as he pled the fifth, that'd have been the story right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that we got. I think that the Democrats are going to have to win in 2018. but also really pressure their Republican colleagues on getting that testimony from him or to help him recall. Because I think that he tried to protect himself just in case other information came out later. Oh, I did recall that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to happen later on. So if you got a chance to watch the testimony, watch the highlights or
don't. Because otherwise it's a lot of, I don't know, I don't remember.
Right. And a lot of smiling. He's very nice to Senator Feinstein. Not very nice to Kamala Harris, though. So, you know, our two senators here. So last week, and Rod Rosenstein testified today as well. And basically, he just said that the questions that he was asked was whether or not he would that the president had the authority to fire the special counsel, which we know he does have the authority to direct the acting the deputy attorney general to then fire him. And then the question would be, would you resign like they did with Nixon, where they got all the way down to Solicitor General with Robert Bork? Would that person resign if the president asked them to fire? I don't think he. I think he just he gave a roundabout. He punted by saying there's been no reason to fire Robert Mueller. He's doing exactly what we've asked them to do. I'm the only one with the authority to do that. The American people should have confidence in the Justice Department and Robert Mueller as much as I do. That's basically what he said.
All right.
And I know we touched earlier on with the congressman on infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't really interested in infrastructure, which is really interesting. I mean, they are, but they aren't. I mean, like, nobody's I mean, I think if you are in, like, obviously here in California, we have a lot of, we got a lot of, I mean, when the Carmageddon happens, I mean, that's an infrastructure problem. you know, if I take the 5 every morning, that's a problem. And
talking
how
about
you,
the 5 freeway.
5 freeway here in California.
People make fun of us. You do know this about that Californians use a "the" in front of the freeway, yeah. Like the 5 like instead of 5 freeway.
It's like the SNL skit, the Californians, exactly. when they talk about that. Uh-huh. I haven't got that far yet. Being a new Californian, having only been here for 4 years, I have not been able to, I still have to use Waze to get to where I'm going, because I could not tell you what road I'm on. I can tell you that I'm on the 5 because I'm on it the most to get there.
But you couldn't figure out how to get there.
No, I couldn't.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I'm directionally challenged. Mm. But you know who's challenged is the president on his infrastructure plan, trying to get Democrats who would appreciate a $1 trillion infrastructure plan.
But I think the problem is you can't get really passionate about it, yay or nay, because as the congressman just said,
there is no plan.
There's not a plan. There's some kind of like words down on paper-ish about...
Right.
But I just keep hearing privatization, and so that's why that was sort of my focus of the questions for the congressman, because I wanted to know, I mean, for me, it feels like a bad thing. It feels like a further corporate takeover. But I was wondering, you know, what's the sense overall about what privatization means, and it sounds from, you know, Congressman Maloney, that it's not always a bad thing.
Right. So I went to the White House website because I try to, like, get it from them before looking at what everybody has to say about it. So the president's plan, it's a very visually appealing, like, little, you know, if you go on the White House website, rebuild America's infrastructure.
Yay.
Lower the average permit from 10 years to 2 years. Which is basically how we got in trouble with the Keystone Pipeline, which has been bursting all down, you know, the Dakotas.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have – obviously, I understand how frustrating red tape can be, having to jump through hurdles and permits and different things like that just to get any business started. Obviously, we talk about permits when we talk about small businesses. Like, what do small businesses need to do? How much money are they having to put in? I think that – you know, lowering the permit time from 10 years to 2 years is huge. Maybe lowering it to like 5 years.
I mean, it probably needs to look at where the inefficiency is,
right,
in the system. I mean, who knows? It could be that 2 years is actually all that we need if we maybe updated technology so that communication was faster. I mean, I don't know if I can just judge the number. I do, like, you feel like, wow, a fifth of the time.
Right.
What important steps are you cutting out?
You're not taking the advice from any environmental impacts. You're not looking at, you're not allowing, because then you now have to go through the State Department on certain permits. You now have to go to the Department of Labor on certain permits. You know, and I think they're trying to cut out, like, how many steps it takes to get to.
Or, I mean, if there was just a way to do it, you know, more efficiently, I think that's. That's the thing. So I would, right, I'm in the camp of, like, I'm kind of meh about transportation because I haven't really heard anything. But
because there's no plan.
There's no plan. But what had me most upset, most passionate all this week before the Jeff Sessions testimony was this little thing that happened while we were all paying attention to the James Comey testimony, which was the House rollback of Frank Dodd.
Dodd-Frank, yeah.
So, which is a banking regulation,
right,
which something that I really believe in. And it kind of just quietly happened and didn't get much press.
Right, but this, I mean, and we'll get back to infrastructure in just a second, but, like, that's not a surprise. It's not a surprise with this Republican Congress. They've been talking about it for
years. Not a surprise at all, but I was, I mean, almost surprised to an impressed point at their moment of opportunity of choosing to do it.
Right.
When everybody was talking about something else, because had James Comey not been testifying that day, and that's what they did that day,
that's what everybody would be talking about. And I think, you know, historically, people have to realize that every time Republicans have taken over the Congress, there has been some sort of depression. You know, so dating back to like 1920, Republicans have taken over both houses. Depression. So with this rollback, obviously they were put into place, Dodd-Frank was put into place to stop the bleeding and to put regulations in place to where this does not happen
so
again.
So that you can't get it too big to fail.
Right. And so, you know, maybe companies will see less regulation and say, we're not going to do that again, but we're, at least we're not handcuffed.
I don't think it's companies.
Banks. The banks will then restructure how they do business. I'm just
super cynical about that. Right. I think it'll take the American people waking up about it and realizing how destructive it is to roll those back.
Right. But back to infrastructure real quick. Private sector piece. The next part of the plan is to unleash private sector capital and expertise to rebuild our cities and states. Now, that kind of makes sense because if you invest in the private sector pieces who have small businesses and things like that in those towns, you give that money to companies. Those companies will then hire jobs, and then you've got. Then it's just the circle,
mm-hmm.
and that can only help jobs in that city. So if it's done right, and people aren't benefiting off the back end on it, in terms of
that's the part that makes me nervous.
And I think that's what the congressman was saying, which was the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
What happens? How much money are the CEOs of those companies making, and how much money is that getting kicked back to the people working on them? Invest in rural infrastructure. The president is proposing $200 billion in infrastructure funding, $15 billion for transformative projects, and $25 billion for rural infrastructure. So the $25 billion for rural infrastructure. Reimagine America's approach to infrastructure with transformative projects. That was so broad on the website. There was no, like, plan.
Yeah, that's why this is like, what does this even mean?
I mean,
I would like to know what... You know, Trump put our infrastructure down during the campaign. I wonder which other countries he likes, who he thinks is doing it right. And then I
Trump Enterprises.
But they don't do transportation unless it's an elevator in their building, but that doesn't count.
Yeah.
So he's a man who I'm sure has traveled, or I hope has traveled, and if he's seen. Hopefully he's seen things in other countries that he was impressed by and that we could use as an inspiration. I don't think it makes me less patriotic or less, you know, American to say, I think other countries have it more right in some areas. Let's borrow their ideas, maybe expand upon them, making it a little more Americanized. But, I mean, this guy should have something. He was such a speaker that, like, you know, people pouring over the walls, like just an illustrative speaker in some regards. He could have really illustrated what's it going to look like. It's going to look like faster. It's going to look like how Singapore's got this and how Hong Kong's got this.
Right. And the last piece is the Workforce Training Initiative, which this is, according to the White House, Workforce Week. A huge initiative.
Workforce Week.
Last week was Infrastructure Week. This week is Workforce Week. As people go into the summer and they think that people are really paying attention, this is an initiative that Ivanka Trump has been very passionate about. She even tweeted out, "Let's put America back to work by providing citizens with the skills and training they need to succeed." Ivanka, they are looking to do 1 million apprenticeships over the next 2 years to get people focused back on, like, you know,
technical skills,
which is great.
Uh-huh.
Which is also a part of the Democrats' plan is to get people back in the technical skills. It's a part of the Hillary Clinton plan,
yeah.
Part of the Bernie Sanders plan.
Yep.
So this is an area where I think Democrats might be interested in funding. However, Democrats have said that the Trump budget reduces the Trump plan part of the budget, reduces infrastructure spending elsewhere, including cuts to Amtrak subsidies, the elimination of an infrastructure investment program that was started under President Obama, and more than $90 billion drop-off in congressional support for the Highway Trust Fund over 10 years. And then, of course, to your point, Democrats are very skeptical of the president's partnerships in the private sector. So I think that we will see Democrats try to work with the president on infrastructure packages because it can only help Democrats in the long run, but it can also help, like the Congress said, getting back to what the American people want to do. So lots unpacked in this past couple of weeks.
And, oh, my goodness.
We are going to be taking the show on hiatus for a little summer break. We got a lot of great new things that we are working on, so stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram, follow our pages at Drugs Alert and at Chelsea Galicia to get the latest on what is next for political culture. Be sure to check out all the other episodes and including Trump versus Hillary. The Trump Report.
Yeah.
On AfterBuzz TV. We'll see you guys in August.
Yep.
See you then.
Bye. Have a great summer.
Thanks to Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney as
well. Oh, yes, absolutely.
For joining us. See you then. And they basically end up growing. Mm-hmm. And they grow and they grow and they grow. I feel like, because I've even seen in some seasons where they may not win, but he'll like, I'm going to send you to culinary school on me. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to make sure that you do this because I have a spot for you.
From
and
I feel like Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christie, Tiana Hobson, yeah.
Because the whole thing is, it's withstanding. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, obviously. It's not
Black
House Kitchen for nothing. It's not Heaven's Kitchen. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole premise of the show. So it's like, I think you're put in the fire to see if you can make gold. Because that's what essentially happened with that medal. So is that true? Am I correct?
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that, I don't know if it's because he is such a big deal that a lot of times when he says that, people, they don't know if he's serious or if he's just talking. He is so serious. Mm-hmm. And I've seen him do it. And
I have to think, like, how much time does like, faux email?
I have.